Chapter 13. Agita. The food in the jail wasn't bad, and Sestito gave him the newspaper every day, but Luca was a caged lion with a chronic case of agita, that classic Italian malady mix of restlessness, irritation, and worry. He paced the cell constantly, unless he had a visitor or stopped to eavesdrop on O'Malley in the next cell. The cement block wall separated the two cells, so it was impossible to see the disgraced police officer, but they could carry on a conversation if they wanted to, which Luca mostly didn't. But today, he leaned against the dividing wall and listened to the quiet conversation between O'Malley and Mr. Dorsey, his lawyer, who stood with arms folded outside O'Malley's cell. O'Malley and his lawyers weren't invited to use the small interview room where Luca had met with Mr. Freshman. Sestito sat behind the desk. Now and then, Sestito looked at Luca, who pretended he wasn't listening. Sestito pretended too. "The Bison Club should be the least of your worries," Dorsey said to O'Malley. "Character witnesses, every one of them." "Keep in mind that your intended blackmail victim is also a member," Dorsey said.
"Doc Lanigan will be enough," O'Malley said.
Dorsey shuffled his feet a bit. "If I call him as a character witness, the prosecution can ask him what he heard you say about Mrs. Blick at the Bison Club banquet. He was at your table, he tells me, along with Blick, Rutherford, and a few others."
"That bastard!"
O'Malley's shout gave Luca a start. From behind the desk, Sestito glared at O'Malley's cell.
"Settle down," he called.
Luca edged closer to the front of his own cell, intrigued by the overheard conversation.
"Bastard,"
O'Malley said again, but this time in a low voice.
"Blick is defending that whore."
"You don't have a defense," the lawyer said tiredly. "Your letter to Blick was a federal misuse of the mails, a blackmail attempt, pure and simple. There is absolutely no truth to what you claim about her background, which wouldn't entitle you to use the mail to extort money from him even if there was a shred of evidence. My best advice is to change your plea to guilty, apologize profusely, and say that you see the error of your ways."
"The woman is a whore," O'Malley insisted. "Doesn't that count for anything?"
"So you say. But no one has produced any proof to say she's anything but a nice woman who is now married to Henry Blick, one of the richest men in Lido."
"Telling your client to plead guilty?"
O'Malley's voice was spiked with anger.
"What kind of a lawyer are you?"
"An honest one."
"Well, maybe I need a new lawyer."
"I'll talk to Chief Doyle and let him know you won't change your plea." Luca settled onto the cot in his cell as the lawyer strode past. Sestito got up from the desk and let the other man out and disappeared. The jail was quiet.
"You doing all right in there, O'Malley?"
Luca got up and stood at the bars.
"Why wouldn't I be all right?"
O'Malley's voice threw a snarl into the quiet. Sestito came back with the evening newspaper. Just as Luca caught the faint call of the steam whistle at the Lido Premium Mill all the way on the east side of Lido. Dinner would arrive soon. A pail from the Black Kettle restaurant that Sestito served out on thick Syracuse china plates with green rims. So far, meals had been a lesson in barely edible American food. Beef stew, fried chicken, overcooked pork chops, too many potatoes and not enough flavor. Luca longed for a slab of lasagna blanketed with Parmesan cheese, arancini the size of an apple, eggplant drowning in spicy arrabbiata sauce, garlic and parsley, sharp, salty olives cured in oil, the signature sandwiches he made at the club. Sometimes he would doze off thinking about salami, pepperoni, and roasted red peppers layered with provolone cheese on a ciabatta roll and drizzled with balsamic vinegar, or slices of chicken spread with basil pesto, then topped with sun-dried tomato and soft hunks of mozzarella. Sestito read the newspaper, then folded it and passed it through the bars of Luca's cell.
"You're off the front page."
"That's a change," O'Malley interjected from his cell.
"Thanks, Joe."
Luca read the newspaper slowly, trying to make it last. He'd never known time to pass so slowly. Mr. Freshman had come twice, armed with pages of questions for Luca to answer. His cousin Enzo Russo visited too, bringing his wife Rosaria's mouth-watering cooking, a dish of linguine, chicken cutlets, and a slab of gingerbread the size of a dinner plate. Things at the farm had settled down, although Luca could tell from the catch in his cousin's voice that things were still strained with Rosaria. As soon as Enzo left, Luca wished he hadn't eaten the food so quickly. Carol and Toby came. The Irishman's sunny outlook was undaunted by the jail. With Joe Sestito within earshot, it had been a cryptic conversation, but Luca was able to learn that his box of valuables was now safely in Tessa's possession. As Carol had anticipated, the police came to search Luca's room at the boarding house. Along with his personal papers, the box contained not only the $2,000 he'd earned rum-running with Toby, but the pocket ledger kept by Owen Fisher, with its damning evidence of how the accountant had cheated Benny Rotolo's bootlegging operation. Luca had other visitors too, Vito and Sonny, and many of the merchants who owned businesses on Hamilton Street. Even the old-timers who spent their days drinking red wine in the club, like Tony Bellotti. But the only person he wanted to see was Tess. His Tessa. She sent books and writing paper, which Sestito let him keep, but when Luca tried to read, his attention invariably drifted. He recalled the night they'd spent together, each minute, each touch, every expression that crossed her face. Unable to speak to her, Luca was plagued by the nightmare that Tess was done with him. The distance between West Park Circle and East Lido was too far to bridge. His secrets were too much for Tess to keep. More than once, he regretted telling her so much. All he'd done was hurt her, make her doubt him. Yet, he'd wanted to be as honest with her as he could. Tess had a right to know the danger she was in with him. Luca knew that the sins of his past would never be absolved. They would never leave him alone, and because of that, anyone he loved was cursed. His wife, Rafaela, his infant child, died because Luca lived in a perpetual state of mortal sin. That would not change, because Luca did not regret his actions and could not atone for them. His eye fell upon a picture under the obituary section. Evelyn Kennedy Thompson, widow of Benedict Thompson, co-founder of the Mohawk and Adirondack Railroad, was put to rest yesterday after a funeral at St. Bridget's Catholic Church, survived only by a niece, Miss Tess Kennedy, 24. He studied the picture, trying to reconcile the striking woman with a disease-riddled crone he'd known. The woman who gave him permission to court Tess, then took it back, as if she'd only belatedly learned of the stain on Luca's soul. O'Malley started talking, trying to engage Sestito. Dinner came. Chicken with a pale yellow gravy. The coffee was the only thing with any flavor.